From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
If you work on an Android app, and if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to presume you do, you'll know that when your user reports a problem or a crash, it's the absolute worst feeling. To make matters worse, they might one-star your app, go on Twitter and complain about the app, and if they're feeling particularly merciless, probably go on Reddit or something and post it there. But you know what? They have absolutely every reason to. If you treat your customers basically as an offsite QA team, it's rude to them and it's just bad for business. As developers, we don't want to rely on customers to report errors. Instead, we want to catch this much early on. Ideally, you just have automated tests and these tell you when there's a problem. But, you know, as we've talked about on the show multiple times, that's not always as easy as we want it to be. Because writing tests can be hard. That's why Sentry, our sponsor for today's show, tells you about errors in your code before your customers have a chance to encounter them. Not only do they tell you about the errors, they also give you helpful details that help you fix these errors. For example, how many users were impacted by this bug, the complete stack trace if it's a crash, the commit ID when this error was released, the engineer who wrote this line of code that was busted, that and a whole lot more. If your code is broken, let's fix it together. That's Sentry's tagline. Love it. You can check them out at sentry.io/4/android. Sentry is a pretty common word. It's actually a pretty cool name for the service if you know the English meaning of the word. But I want to make sure you get that domain name right. It's sentry.io. Once again, sentry.io/4/android. Check them out today and fix your errors before your users encounter them. Thanks for sponsoring today's show, Sentry.
In this show, I sit down and talk with Joe Birch, the Android lead of Buffer. Buffer is a social media app that a lot of you probably already use. Joe is also a GDE for Android, Actions on Google, Flutter, and Google Pay. He's a phenomenal speaker, speaks at conferences around the world regarding everything from Android to Actions to all different kinds of stuff. He also recently produced chordassist.com. which is a accessible smart guitar for the blind, deaf, and mute. And in today's conversation, we sit down and talk about clean architecture. Joe does a great job of breaking down the concepts, why they matter, and why you might want to start experiencing what developing with clean architecture might be. And lastly, what clean architecture is, and mainly that it's a conceptual model of a particular type of architecture. Without any further ado, let's hop into it. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be here.
For folks that aren't familiar with perhaps who you are, your background, and so forth, which would be kind of hard to believe, you're kind of everywhere, it seems, with blogging and speaking, everything. But if they haven't been familiar with who you are, can you kind of give us some background information on yourself, where you work, perhaps what got you into Android, and what you do now?
Cool, yeah, perfectly. My name's Joe. I'm an Android engineer at a company called Buffer, and we deal with social media, scheduling, analytics, and customer support tools. I've been there for several years now, working remotely as part of a small team. I've been doing Android for maybe like 7-8 years or so. I started it at university and kind of just fell in love with it straight from off the bat. Worked for an agency straight out of when I finished my course, and yeah, joined Buffer shortly afterwards, and haven't looked back.
You're one of the other folks out there that's fully remote like myself, so it's good to talk to another person out there that's remote. And you also have your own podcast where you talk about remote work. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a podcast called The Remote Dev. We've only had a few episodes out, but yeah, it's cool. It's really interesting to talk to engineers and hear their like how they work remotely and any struggles and successes that they have in that process.
Definitely. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show today was to talk to you about something you've talked quite a bit about, you've had a course on, and so forth. You've done some writing on it, and that's the topic of clean architecture. Mm. We've had a lot of folks ask us about having someone on the show to talk about clean architecture. So I thought it'd be great to get you on here to discuss clean architecture, kind of what it is, maybe why it's important, why you might want to use it, and so forth. And it seems like something you have quite a bit of experience in. Is clean architecture something that you currently develop your applications with, or is it something you just kind of played with, or what?
So it started off with just playing around with it like anything does. And so we do stuff at my work. We use clean architecture, not strictly by the book, because the whole practice itself can become quite complex and quite, you know, over-engineered if not done properly. Like, you can do stuff for the sake of it, for example. So we use we're quite influenced by it, but not to the book. I don't use it in my own projects, like my side projects and stuff, because they're so small that I don't feel it makes sense. But when you need something that sort of gives you that, a project, like a structure that's easy to maintain, easy to test, and also like really simple to reuse code across projects, that's where clean architecture really shines. So for us at work with multiple apps, like, we do really see the benefits from it.
So what exactly is clean architecture? For, let's assume that like me and you are hanging out right now, and someone, you know, there's a new developer with us, and we say clean architecture and their eyes kind of gloss over. How do we explain it to them what clean architecture is, on terms that they could understand it, and maybe why they would use it?
So clean architecture is kind of like, I call it an architectural practice, because it's like, it's not such so much as a pattern as such, but it's kind of where you construct your projects. And a simple way to look at it is, like, if you're going to take your project and split it up into separate layers that are independent of one another, and could be sort of used independently and aren't sort of tightly coupled. So we could have, for example, like, maybe our application has four layers, and each of those layers has an individual responsibility within our project, such as maybe we have our low down layer, like our domain logic, which are like core business logic, which is then kind of defines the core principles of our application, like our business stuff. And then as we go out from that central layer, we get more and more higher levels. So we start at this really central core business layer logic, and we go out and out into these separate layers that sort of define, get more higher level, but also more tied to a framework.
Why is that known as like it sounds very like almost like an onion kind of pattern, like we just kind of have different layers here. Would that be a good analogy?
Yeah, so it's often referred to as the onion pattern. So yeah, we have the typical structure of that onion is four layers. So to give a bit of background on those layers, we start off with the innermost layer, which is known as the enterprise business rules. So this essentially just contains what we call entities, and those entities are the business objects. So imagine in Kotlin, you'd have like a data class, which is, for example, a user, and that is like whatever is core to your business is an entity. And the reason why is that's in the center is because it's just defines those enterprise business rules, and it's not tied to any other layer in that diagram. So it's a layer that's on its own, has no reference to any other layers, and it's and the great thing is that you can then reuse that throughout your enterprise. So if you're in a company that has many different projects and many different applications, that could be shared and reused, and you only have to define that once. And it's kind of like a way of, I guess, enforcing that business logic. It's kind of, it can't be changed by those applications, those other layers that are using it.
So would you said something like data classes, sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to kind of understand that. I guess it could be classes or data classes.
Yeah.
And are you putting like the logic for whatever business rule for that user, like that they can only have a username that is at least six characters or whatever? Is that all going inside of those data classes? Is that where all that, or that whatever classes?
So yeah, if you want to define stuff that is specific, so if you have a user and you have the username rules, then if that is an enterprise rule, if that is like true across the whole enterprise, then that can be kept. So if that rule is going to be used across different projects, for example, like if you have three apps and that rule should be used everywhere, no matter what, then that is an enterprise rule. So that should be, whether it's inside of a utility class inside that layer or whether it's inside the class itself, it doesn't matter too much, but that can live in there. And And if you don't have an enterprise, like if you're just using like a single app, like a one project, then you can still have this enterprise business rules layer. It's just specific to that application rather than being used across different projects. If you need that kind of abstraction, if you need that to be in its own sort of layer, and it can still be done if you only have a single project, for example.
So I can imagine that some folks are listening now that are in that scenario where they have only one project, they're working just with that one app for their one company, and they're hearing you say like, all right, well, if you want to share those rules, and maybe they're getting to that point and they're kind of wondering like, okay, I know I do have that scenario. I do need to share this code with other projects. How do you do that right now? How do you share that code? Are you using something like Git submodules? Are you using actual modules in the application? Are you packaging them as AARs? Mm. Or like, how are you getting them into different applications?
So we have, we don't actually have this enterprise business rules layer as a separate module. We have it merged with the next layer, which I'll come on to a bit more in a bit. But you can, yeah. So if you want to, when we started like approaching clean architecture, we had it in their own packages. So because we had quite a monolithic project, like everything was quite tightly coupled. So we just kept stuff within packages and like kept things simple without trying to change too much at once. So it does work for packages. The only thing I find with packages, obviously you have like package level permissions and stuff, but it's easier to break, like if you're trying to set strict guidelines, like if you really want to set like enforce things, I find it's easier to do that when things are sort of separated out into their own modules and it's just a bit cleaner and obviously more reusable. So packages is completely fine, but if you're going to use it across projects or you just want, you know, some of the benefits that the build times, for example, like some of the newer things you've seen in Gradle is faster build times from modularization. So you could see that whether it's even a small difference. And the way we do it with these kind of things when we share them across projects is we have them as just private Git repositories that are then just sent through a bin tray and JCenter, and we just import them from that way.
Also, just import them, like, are they imported just as like a line in the Gradle file,
yeah,
or what?
Yeah, just imported as a Gradle dependency. And we previously, before we had multiple projects, we just had them within the same project and just imported them as a local project. But and now we have another app in production and another app that's an experiment. We're using these modules throughout those projects, so it makes more sense for us to have them as Gradle imports from remote sources.
So that's interesting. So I maybe would have that line in my I'm assuming here, and we're talking code on a podcast, which is hard, but we have perhaps it's in the dependencies block, and I'll say implementation, and then whatever that, you know, the group and the package is, and then I have a version number. Is that kind of how the same type of thing I've been used to doing?
Yeah, we do it through that way. I know it's not with versioning, it's like, oh, if you change, even if you change something small, then you have to sort of update a new version. But the enterprise business rules stuff isn't stuff that changes often unless there is a change to the business, because these are things that are only going to change in those kind of states. So it's these entities don't hold like view data. That's not going to hold like states of views and so on. So they're not, if you're just tweaking a feature, or even if you're like most of the time, if you're adding a new feature, then these things will not change anyway.
So it seems like this could actually just be, most likely it's probably like a Java module. Is that right?
Yep. It's a pure Java or a pure Kotlin module. Because it's literally just has the classes of the data that you're representing and any utility methods that you may want to define.
Okay.
So it's a pretty lightweight module. And, you know, if you do have tests for it, if you do have stuff that's like utility things that define certain rules for those entities, then you might have tested there as well, which is cool.
So that's interesting. I'm going deep into the weeds, and I was starting with layers, and I'm kind of just diving really deep into this later, but I think it's interesting, and I think a lot of folks kind of want to know how this all works together, so that's why I'm diving this way. But so what we're saying here is if we do have those business rules, and just to kind of recap here, and for some reason there's a change to some user business rule, it's in a Kotlin file. So we make that change, we push it up to repository, your continuous integration server kicks it off, whatever. When the build is done, I'm assuming it publishes a new artifact to, you know, bin tray or whatever you're using. and then has a new version number. Is that an automated process, or do you recommend folks go automated with that, or what does that normally look like?
So we have to update the, currently we're updating the version in within our app manually. So, but we can't, yeah. So we don't have the automated versioning for the library builds yet. We've got that for app releases, and we are currently in the process of doing it for library releases. Because to be honest, it's only something we started doing recently in the last few months, to have those as remote libraries rather than sort of local dependencies. Okay. But yeah, the process will be trigger it, do a new version number, and then we'll just, once that's ready, we'll add it manually to our project.
Okay, so you basically have a couple of different projects. You have that one for your enterprise business rules that gets updated. We've published it. There's a new version. Everything's good. Then we just go back into our Android app and say, hey, we have a new version of these rules. We change the version number, re-sync with Gradle, and now all of a sudden we have the new goodness that was developed before, right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Okay, perfect. So you mentioned that you had merged, in your scenario, merged the enterprise business rules with another layer. What was that next layer?
So the next layer we have is the application business rules. So these are kind of, you can see the name's very similar, but these are just things that are specific to our application. So the reason might already be obvious why we merged those, because we didn't have enterprise projects. So it didn't make sense for us to have an enterprise layer and an application layer. So we kind of just merged those two together, just to keep things simpler. Like, we didn't need that complexity, so why have it? But the application business rules is essentially like, it holds the use cases of the application. So things that perform operations on those entities. So maybe if we have an entity that's a user, we might have a use case that's update email or delete user or change username. So those use cases are things that perform operations on the business objects of our application. And that's literally what that next layer, that's literally what that layer does. So that's the reason why we merged the two, because it just made it a bit simpler, and we didn't want to over-engineer things.
Makes sense. Okay, cool. So what's the next layer after we have the application business rules?
So next comes the interface adapters. So this is things like anything that's like presenters or controllers. We just usually refer to it as like any presentation logic, things that will make use of the use. So maybe we'll have a presenter or a view model, and that will make use of a use case class to perform some operation within our application. So again, this layer and any layer that we just looked at does not have any reference to any framework. So if we have presenters, they don't have any Android references. Our use cases don't have any Android references. And our pure Kotlin module, which would be the enterprise business rules, don't have Android references either. And that's another thing that shines here with clean architecture, because I don't speak too soon, but Android is... if something happened to Android and there was some form of replacement, or we were using something else, for example, Kotlin multi-platform, if all of these three layers were written in core Kotlin, they're reusable with some other framework that we might want to use, because they haven't got any Android references within them at all. So it keeps them completely clean and sort of decoupled from a specific framework. And this probably like it shines more in, I imagine, web development and stuff, where frameworks are changing more often, because in this sense, you'd have a lot more freedom, and your entire code base and presentation logic wouldn't be tied to a specific framework.
Now, you said interface adapters. So that's kind of for the actual user interface. And the reason why I'm asking, because you also mentioned that you're not having a reference to Android, but you did say view model. Would those be your own custom view models? That wouldn't be the Android view model stuff, would it?
So yeah, that's where it's a little bit different with Android, because you would, if you're using the architecture components view models, then this layer would have a reference. Previously, before that library was around, a lot of people using MVP, and we were as well. So that was the case for us. But yeah, so now we've moved to architecture components. We do have Android references in that layer, which is. You could abstract, there probably would be a way to abstract it, but that's probably maybe a bit overkill. It depends on the situation. It depends how passionate you are about having those layers clean of Android stuff.
And I mean, that anytime you introduce Android into one of the modules, in my experience, I find that it complicates testing. Have you found that to be the case here, or is testing still pretty easy for that interface adapter level layer?
Yeah, it doesn't complicate stuff too much, I don't find. I mean, we have our view model tests, and yeah, it seems to work fine like it previously did. I mean, with clean architecture, we have testing's easier anyway because everything is so decoupled and everything's like doing its having its own single responsibility. And that's one of the big things about clean architecture. Is one of the really big influences is a single responsibility rule, like keeping things small and focused, and that really complements the testing anyway. So if anything, testing is easier already from having clean architecture in place. But we don't see any downsides of having that those Android references in that presentation layer. If anything, like if there was, it would probably still just be a trade-off compared to having abstracting that stuff out when we don't really need to.
Okay. So we have the interface, basically the interface layer is responsible for any of that presentation logic that you said, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm assuming, I'm just going to guess here, the next layer up, is that going to be your actual implementation on whatever platform you're on? And I guess your case is going to be Android, right?
Yep. You got it.
What's that layer called?
So that layer is called the frameworks and drivers. So we have anything that's tied to some form of framework. So it could be user interfaces like activities and fragments. It could be anything external. So maybe we're using, I don't know, Pusher or Firebase or Room. Anything that is tied to a specific framework would belong in there, for example, databases and so on. So that's the final layer in the standard kind of approach. That's how it's like sort of marketed as.
It seems like that layer might kind of be like a layer that has a lot of cross-cutting concerns, because and the way why I say that is you said Room, and I think about, you know, data, it's a database. That's, to me, I've always felt that data was kind of this central component of your app, and then you kind of build stuff around data. Do you find that the framework and drivers layer kind of maybe sits like vertically on the stack of layers, or does it not have any cross-cutting concerns? I'm kind of wondering what that looks like from top to bottom for like a particular feature.
Yeah, so when it comes to these layers, like this isn't specifically saying you have to have these four different modules. You could have the database stuff in one module, you could have the UI in another module, you could have networking in one module, and that they all fall into that top layer, but they don't necessarily have to know about one another. So the layers is just kind of a way of saying like this is the way, the kind of the direction of dependencies. So with clean architecture, we have a dependency rule that basically layers on the inside know nothing about the layers outside of them. So that's kind of just a way of orchestrating, hey, like the frameworks know about the controllers, but controllers don't know about the frameworks, and so on, like vice versa.
Oh, that makes sense. So if I were to draw this up, I have a box on the top, and that would be the frameworks and drivers, which could be the activities. Let's just say activities for now.
Yeah.
And it may have a down arrow to the interface places where it interacts, it knows about the presenters, and then that box would have a down arrow to the application business rules, and the presenters would know about the application business rules, not all the way down to the user object, which is the enterprise business rule. It would have an arrow down to that, but not going the other way around. The enterprise business rules have no idea about what the heck or that even application business rules exist. Same thing for application business rules, don't know anything about interface adapters, and interface adapters have no idea about frameworks or drivers or anything, right?
Yep. Yeah, and that's what makes them reusable across applications, because we could take the entities and the use cases in their business rules layer, and because there's no external dependency there, we can just unplug that and stick it somewhere else. Whereas if we did have that dependencies the other way around, then they're coupled to the implementations that we have.
Yeah, so it's like almost like a unidirectional dependency graph. Like it's just going straight down and it's not coming back out. Because I've seen a lot of dependency graphs sometimes when you can generate them with various tools, and it's just like this huge spaghetti mess of everything. And you're like, I don't even know what's going on.
We've all been there. and with those layers, like that's the whole four layer thing is kind of just like a basic guideline of clean architecture. Like, it doesn't mean you have to have four modules. Like, as long as you have that raw of dependencies in place, you could have like we merged those two layers. You could have three layers. You could have five layers. I don't know, 10 layers. I'm not sure like how far you want to go. But as long as you stick to that rule of the dependencies, then you're adhering to clean architecture as such.
So that's kind of, that brings up a good point. Would you say that's the overarching concept of clean architecture, is just kind of understanding your dependency management and keeping it in, you know, kind of a single flow of dependencies, so it's easier to reuse these components?
I think clean architecture, that's a big thing. And at the end, like, I think it's just, a lot of it is just heavily influenced by like principles, or like solid principles, and following like good architecture design and stuff. And it's just creating stuff that is focused, like small and focused and independent, and using interfaces to abstract things. Like, it's all ties into those principles. And it's just like they all come together to create this kind of onion that we have.
There had to be at some point in your career where you sat down and you thought like, okay, enough is enough. Like, this app is a huge ball of spaghetti. I can't do anything without breaking 12 other things. What was that point for you that made you go look for an alternative, and how did you find clean architecture?
So it was shortly after I'd been working at Buffer for a bit, and I think we had the application that hadn't really had any, like, not that you have to refactor code all the time, but like, it had very old code that was like, it was very tightly coupled. There were a lot of things touching a lot of other things, and it was quite hard to work with. I can't remember how many times I broke things because I changed one thing and somewhere else, something else had broken. I didn't even know about it. And because it was a big app, it was hard to have the full context. And there's only two of us working on it. So we tried thinking about some alternative ways. Like, we did introduce testing. That was the first thing I did when I joined. There's no tests either. So it's obviously a big risk of anything you change. So, and I think it was actually, my friend, the guy I do the podcast with, David Gonzalez, I think he was the one who told me about it actually first, clean architecture. And we got talking about it, and I think he talked about it at a talk briefly. I was like, oh, well, this sounds quite interesting. And I started reading up on it. I was reading some stuff from Uncle Bob and videos, and I was quite intrigued. Like, so I made a boilerplate project for our app. Like, just, oh, I'll give it a go. I'll see if I can create something that like could represent what we could use. And I was really happy with it. Like, it's like, oh, this is actually really nice. Like, this could, you know, really help us to get our app into shape. And yeah, I decided to go with it bit by bit. And there's still a lot of the code base that isn't adhering to that. Like, some stuff that's maybe doesn't need to change. We've just left it as it is, because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't need to touch it. But yeah, that's kind of the way, really.
Was there any point during that process where you kind of had the light bulb moment of like, oh wow, this is really powerful. This gives me a lot of freedom, a lot of flexibility. It allows me to have a lot more testability inside of my application. Was there any of those moments that kind of really sold you on this pattern or this kind of this concept?
I think the testing, like, is the huge thing for me. That is like, when we started adding, it was easier to write tests, for example. But when I was adding the first tests, I was like, oh my god, this is so nice. I'm literally just testing this. I'm only touching this module. I'm not touching anything else in the project. And obviously that could be the case with projects that are architected well anyway. It doesn't necessarily have to be clean architecture. But that was one of the bigger things for me. And I'm a big fan of, like, obviously I don't like doing stuff just for the sake of it, but I'm a big fan of clean code and like having stuff that's easy to maintain, having stuff that's easy to test. And just being able to jump in and change something and know that I'm only touching this one thing and it's not going to affect anything else. I like the use cases, for example, like when we made some changes to some functionality, I remember jumping into a use case and just changing a few bits and being like, okay, cool, that's all we need to do. I don't need to touch this other thing or this activity or someone.
Did, the tests that you were able to write were, I'm assuming that those were unit tests or integration tests, meaning, you know, for those listening, that you were not using Espresso. So you're just using like JUnit. And when you're doing that, it allowed you to iterate much faster because running those tests iteratively is super fast compared to Espresso tests.
Yeah, so much quicker. So having our tests run on our presentation layer, on our enterprise rules layer and application rules was just so quick. And just being able to run those things is a lot different from Espresso. I mean, we do write Espresso tests, but like we try to fall back to unit testing and where possible, just to be able to save ourselves that time on both development and during our builds process.
Definitely. Do you have a heuristic that you follow to say, all right, well, we know we have great code coverage for our lower layers, our interface layer, application and enterprise rules layers. Now we have, you know, the Android activity. Do you have a heuristic that you follow to say, all right, well, I already know that those business rules are right, but we now need to kind of at least write kind of some smoke tests to make sure that the app does what it does. Do you have any rules that you kind of follow or any, you know, guidelines that you would recommend people in that regard?
Yeah. So like in terms of like when it comes to JVM stuff, like our view models are completely tested just because that's like something we believe we should do. Cause you know, although they're still using they run quickish and they're easy to write. When it comes to Espresso, like we try and get away with the minimum. Like we at least like launch the screen and maybe click on a component like to check it shows, but we don't go to the extent of like checking colors and checking like orientation changes and so on. Just because development time and build times like really do rack up. Like our current build time for our CI server is 40 maybe 50 minutes. So we're working on bringing it down because there's obviously some inefficiencies, but we do have a lot of tests and even Espresso tests like that we originally added that now we're thinking like, maybe we don't need these. Like maybe they're a bit too precautionary.
Mm-hmm. Would you say the majority of your time for your build right now is spent in Espresso tests or is it spent elsewhere?
It's a big chunk of it. Yeah. A big chunk of it is Espresso tests. I don't know exactly how long is it without, but yeah, we're talking maybe at least 15 minutes of that, maybe 20 is Espresso tests. And that's only one device. So
yeah. Understandable. Yeah. Now, some of the folks that I've seen kind of get into clean architecture or I guess kind of say almost oppose clean architecture say that it's just something that's just like way too complicated. You don't need it. And you made a very important claim right at the beginning of, you know what, sometimes you don't need to use this. You know, if you have a simple, small app, then it's probably not a good use case for this. Do you have any kind of rules of thumb where you're like, hey, you know what, once you kind of hit this, you know, this point X, that's when you might want to consider clean architecture. And if you're not doing that, then don't worry about it. Is there anything you could advise there?
Yeah. I think there's a few cases that come to mind in that area. Like, If I was building a project that I knew was going to be large and I knew was going to be complex, like if you're given a spec up front and it's like, this is what this is going to be, and it was a big project, then obviously it depends on the project, but that would be, the larger the project, the more applicable it is, because there's going to be a lot more going on within the project itself. Whereas if it's a small project, like I probably wouldn't even be thinking about it at that point. If you don't have clean architecture at that point, as a project starts to grow and, you know, you probably start to recognize or foresee things that, you know, like, oh, wait a minute, like this is going to get complex. Like maybe you have an MVP project and like it just does a couple of things. And as you start to, as the business grows and you start to add more business logic and more features, and maybe you have more members join the team and maybe you want to start sharing code. And I think that's the point where any of those points could start to trigger those thoughts of, okay, maybe we could start doing something here. And it's not a case of like, if that happens, it's not going to be a case of, okay, then let's just stop everything we're doing and just modularize our app in a clean architecture fashion. Like that's not what we did. Like we didn't drop everything. We didn't stop feature development. It's kind of just like a bit by bit process. Like what can we do to start splitting things out into this fashion? Like whether it's just new features or whether it's just a layer at a time. It's not a case of all or nothing, because that's what I think probably as well puts people off in that sense, is it being a daunting task of there being, you know, so much to change.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you adopt a pattern like that, it doesn't matter if it's MVP or if MVVM, everyone wants to go all, you know, whole hog and do the whole app. And that's just, it's not realistic. So I really like how you said, you know, you approach it bit by bit. If it's a new feature, we'll go down this route, et cetera. Now for folks that do decide like, hey, you know what, we are running into some of these dependency problems. This sounds like a possible solution for us. We would like to do this. And maybe they just have one app. Can they do this just in their app without having to break into modules and using like dependency management? Can they just say, hey, this is our package and this one is called the business rules and we just try to make sure that it doesn't depend on anything else? Or is that too hard to manage because it's too easy to mess up? What do you think?
I think if you set clear guidelines, if you have people on the team who understand like how those dependencies should look like within packages, like and how to set it up in a way that maybe certain classes can't be accessed, like through scopes. I think that's fine. Like when we first did it, we kept it within, because it was still like a, you know, we didn't want to jump in and just change a whole project. We kept it within packages to keep it simple. So we had, in Android, it looks a little bit different because of the way things work. So we had like a data layer, a domain layer, and a remote and cache layer. So that domain layer was for our use cases and enterprise business rules. We had the data layer, which was like handling data operations and essentially like the database stuff and the remote stuff. And we just moved stuff into packages as we felt needed. So if I was working on something and I thought, okay, this code, you know, it's not going to take me too long to refactor this little bit and move it into this package and do it in a way that will help us improve things moving forward. So it's totally reasonable to do it in packages. And I think that would be a good idea because if you make something more work than needs to be, like if you start making modules and if stuff doesn't work, then you're easily going to get put off of it and maybe get the wrong idea. So yeah, I think it's good to keep it simple and experiment and see if it feels right from that point.
Makes sense. And I think like once you get into that to that point where you have everything in packages and it makes sense, it's only a natural progression to eventually run into the situation where you need to reuse one of those packages for something else or something of that nature. At that point in time, is that when you normally recommend, hey, take that, you know, that the enterprise business rules layer, take that and pull it into its own module in the project. Even if you just don't need it yet, you can pull it into your own module. So it's still within the same project, but then it's in a module. Do you recommend going that route? And if they do go that route, should they just automatically pull it off into its own project and then start doing the dependency management thing? Or what's kind of the progression of getting to that point where you're at now?
Yeah, so it's kind of the same as like when we treat it exactly the same as if we were having like a, I don't know, some custom view that we wanted to open source or something else. We make a module. So if it's in a package in our application, we make a module within that project and move that into a local project and get things working that way. Because if we start adding the remote stuff, then it's just another thing that might not go smoothly. So kind of do it step by step. Get into a module, check it all works and everything's working properly. And then if we're happy with that, then we'll move it into a library and into a remote package and then add that to the project. But yeah, most of the time we do it that way just to keep things smooth and see things are working fine. And even at that point, like you might not need it to be a remote module or a remote library. Like if you're not reusing it across projects, for now, you could just remove it into a local module and leave it that way until you need to reuse it. And you might not even need to reuse it ever. So it doesn't need to be a remote package. So having it local, like we have a couple of library projects which aren't open source and which aren't used elsewhere that we just keep local and that's fine for us.
It kind of makes sense. Yeah. I think when you get to the point when you realize you need to move it into a module or to an external module to host it elsewhere, you'll know when that comes.
Yeah.
And when it does, and if it's already in its own local module, it's pretty easy to kind of handle that because you can push that code up into that other project into its own, you know, bin tray or whatever. And then back in your application, you know, project, you just go into the Gradle file and say, hey, instead of this implementation referencing a project inside of my project, you know, that's just the code, we'll say, hey, it's actually this location here or this, you know, package name and this group and this version number. And then we pretty much just, you know, refresh your dependencies and you're off to the races. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Cool. So I think one of the everything I'm gathering here, the thing with clean architecture that I think a lot of people, when they think about it, they see it as this pattern like MVP or something like that. And they're like, oh, there's this, all this stuff I have to go do. And there's this prescribed pattern that I have to follow. And like you said, I get kind of stuck into a box and I have to do everything that way. And clean architecture doesn't, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, it seems like clean architecture isn't that way. It's more of a conceptual model of breaking your application into manageable layers that are only dependent upon the lower level layer, so to, for them to do their job. And then you can break those dependencies with, you know, shims of like interfaces or stuff like that. Would you agree that that's kind of like how it looks from a high level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, completely. And I think that's the great thing about it, because it's not, it's like a collection of practices and ideas and people, there's a bunch of products online that do it differently, but as long as you're adhering to that dependency rule, then you're following the main principle of it. So, you know, within the presentation layer, you could have MVP, you could have MVVM, or whatever you want. That doesn't matter. You could have, you could be following certain principles. You could not be following other things. And yeah, as long as your dependencies are in check, like going inwards, then that's, it's all good.
It makes sense too, because it's almost a kind of like a nomenclature for folks that want to join your team or team members. If they know what clean architecture is, you can say, oh yeah, we're clean architecture. We have three layers. And they might say like, oh, I understand that because our last company had, you know, did clean architecture, but we had five layers. And it's not this, like I said, it's not a prescribed pattern. You have to have exactly three or have to have exactly five. It's just like, this is just kind of how the project is formatted and set up, so we can make right maintainable software.
And for new people joining as well, I think it's probably easier to understand the code base, because if things aren't tightly coupled, there's going to be less chance of breaking things. And they could, you know, maybe you've got someone who's newer to technology and you want to ease them into it. And they could start on, maybe they start on a non-framework layer just to get more comfortable with Kotlin, and rather than trying to do Kotlin and Android at the same time. And it allows you to have that kind of focus there if that's needed.
Definitely. And that brings up a good point, is like, if you do have a new team member that's joining your team, or you just have someone in general you want to introduce to them, what would you recommend to them as somewhere to go kind of learn more about how to get up and running with architecture, clean architecture, or how to, or what it's like, or, you know, basically to get to the point where they're comfortable saying, oh, I understand the concept or what to do.
Mm. So there's a couple of things I'd recommend. I think like it's definitely worth watching or reading anything online by Uncle Bob, because he's the one who sort of coined the term and created this practice. So he's got a blog, and if you search clean architecture on Google, his thing always come up first.
I'll put the link in the show notes for that.
Definitely recommend checking that out. It always helps to see a project, and not to personally plug our own one, but we do have, Buffer does have a clean architecture boilerplate. I can put the link in there as well. And that is basically seeing that, I think seeing something, because when I first saw clean architecture, I was kind of like, okay, this looks really cool and good, but how the hell will this look on Android? It's always the way, isn't it? Like you need to see something real and how it would look. So we've got a boilerplate that we made and it's on GitHub, and a lot of people have used that to help them understand clean architecture. And I think the best way is to fire it up, have a look, look at the dependency, see how things are tied together, maybe stick a debugger on there and see where things move and so on, and just get to grips with it that way. I think that's probably a good way to go about it.
Excellent. And then lastly, you also have your own course on Castor.io for Android clean architecture as well. I mean, it's a couple hours in length at least, tons of lessons. So I think for folks that are listening, if you're looking for a good video course, I would highly recommend watching your course on it.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, definitely. It was a great fun to make. And yeah, it's a long course, but it definitely goes really into depth in how we can build Android apps with clean architecture.
Well, Joe, this has been action-packed, full of all kinds of information regarding clean architecture. I think you've really kind of cleared the cobwebs out for me and hopefully many other listeners in regards to clean architecture. And I know I feel a lot more confident in having conversations around clean architecture just from this, you know, short conversation you and I have had together. So thank you for coming on the show and talking about it.
No worries. My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Is there anything that you would like to share? Perhaps any events you're speaking at, anything of that nature that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, sure. I've got a few conferences coming up. I'm not talking about clean architecture, but I'm talking about a guitar that I built for the blind, deaf and mute. a few places in Europe. Speaking at in IT Next in October, Amsterdam, and also Code Motion in Milan. If you're in any of those areas around that time, October, then yeah, come say hi, and I'd love to chat to people some more.
Let's do a real quick. I want to make a quick divergence here. That you mentioned the guitar. I've seen this. Can you explain what that is? I think it's really cool. Talk about it for a second.
Yeah, sure thing. So it's essentially a guitar that's powered by the Raspberry Pi and actions on Google, which allows blind, deaf and mute people to learn how to play the guitar. So it has, where do I start? It has a Google Assistant built in, and that's the key driver of the guitar. So you can talk to the guitar and say, hey, tell me how to play the C chord. And actions on Google will do all its stuff in the background. It hits the Dialogflow API and comes back with a chord representation. So it comes back with all the information about the chord you asked for. And then on the guitar, the user has some controls, and they can turn on a screen, a speaker, or a Braille reader. So if you have the screen turned on, then it will show a chord diagram, which it fetches from Firebase storage. So it's basically just a chord diagram for where they place their fingers. So that is for people who may be deaf or mute. People who are just deaf because they can't hear the speaker, so they need that visual representation. The speaker is there for people who can hear, and they can hear that feedback on how to play the chord. So it will say E string open, A string fret one, or so on. And on the back of the guitar, it has a Braille reader. So if the person is blind or even deaf too, they can use a Braille reader on the back of the guitar to sort of feel how to play the chord. So it will read out those chord instructions, the same as the speaker, but in Braille. And that all is just happening on the Raspberry Pi. And there's also a chord selection control. So it has a little LCD, another screen, which is like a segment display, and it shows all the available chords. So you can flick through the different chords you can learn and select one. And that will trigger the same flow that speaking to the guitar would do. And that was kind of a last minute addition. And I added it for people who may be mute. So if you can't speak and you can't talk to the guitar. So that's kind of another way for someone to request how to learn to play a chord. And that's kind of it, really. Like, that's all.
It seems like quite the project, though. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there. How long did that take you to build?
Yeah, it was about 6 months. It was a long project, like, because it's all pretty much all hardware based, and I'm not too familiar with hardware. Like, I've done stuff before, but this was quite a lot of different moving parts. So there's a lot of trial and error. But yeah, got there in the end, and it was super fun to build. And yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it some more.
All right. Well, I'm going to add a link to that project that you have. I know there's all kinds of articles online about it, so it's been talked about quite a bit. It's really cool that you did that. Fantastic project. Congratulations on completing that.
Thank you.
Now, if folks want to get a hold of you after the show, they want to ask you a question regarding clean architecture, perhaps the guitar or anything of that nature, maybe what you're speaking at, so forth, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can get me on Twitter. It's @HiThereJoe. And if you want to get in touch on Instagram, or, you know, it's the same username @HiThereJoe. Yeah, they're probably the best places to reach out to me. I'm quite active on those. So yeah, feel free to say hi, and looking forward to chatting some more.
Definitely. Well, Joe, it's been awesome. Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
All right. We'll catch you in the next episode.
I want to thank Sentry for sponsoring today's show. Their tagline is, "Your code is broken. Let's fix it together." They're a super cool crash reporting service that gives you all the helpful details that you need when detecting and fixing errors in your application. Don't wait for your users to report your errors and crashes. Use Sentry to catch them earlier. Check them out at sentry.io/4/android. Once again, because Sentry is a common word, I want to make sure you get it right. Sentry.io. My thanks to Sentry for sponsoring today's show. That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.